Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Laurie Wilson. Laurie Wilson is the author of the poetry collection House Where a Woman, published by Autumn House Press in 2009. Her poems and reviews have appeared in Women's Review of Books, Salamander, The Laurel Review, Georgetown Review, Cerise, 5 a.m., and elsewhere. A recipient of the Mid-Atlantic Arts Foundation Creative Fellowship at the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts, she teaches a poetry workshop in Morgantown, West Virginia, in affiliation with the Mad Women in the Attic at Carlo University. And her new manuscript is entitled The Horse at Dunkard Creek. Hi, Laurie. How are you?
Hi, Jan. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear some new poems. So you're going to be reading some new poems from The Horse at Dunkard Creek?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes. I'm going to start with the poem that actually is the first poem in the manuscript. The Well. I was born without a meadow. No grouse hid. No red-winged blackbird skimmed a path. No grass lay flattened by wind. If inside me was a well, I didn't know it. I walked on cracking ground, expecting thorns. Rocks cut my feet. I slipped in mud. I ran unsteady, ran in driving rain, in snow, on roads, around the cars, the sidewalks icy. Inside me was a well I couldn't find. I had no center, only wobble, rock, rock and catch. Two sparrows on the porch wall pecked at scattered seeds. Their rhythmic dip and rise held steady in the wind. I ran, kept running. How I wanted to sink into cradle of hip, hinge of knee. How I wanted to fall over the well lip and down, clear to the bottom, and lean against the muscle of that throat. The next poem that I want to read had its origin in a dream, and I don't actually know how far it's come from the dream now. And it has a title that runs into the poem. When to wake is to head down a road over which an unpredictable wind raises such dust I can't breathe, and the sky through grit is a face drained of color. I want to return to the dream where color figured, even if no one spoke, even if I didn't move. There was a room with white walls, perfect corners, each angle exact, and straight lines where walls met not only each other, but also the ceiling, the red pine floor. On two walls, a window with raised wooden sash, fine screen. On a third, a door with glass knob, brass hinges. On the floor, skeins of embroidery floss, gold wrappers already slid from the thread, sunflower, magenta, silver, turquoise, unfolded colors still kinked but untangled, radiating from gold paper cylinders piled, a cobbled sun in my lap. Some slide under the door, some climb the wall to a window screen's mesh of needle eyes pulling them through. I remember the feel of that thread, dividing strands, wetting them in my mouth, poking until the needle accepted them, linen yielding to its point in and out 100 times. I love thee more than yesterday, less than tomorrow. My grandmother's tablecloth embroidered with grapes, purple silk under my fingers, a calming ritual in the chaos of smoke, loud talk, heady smells, turkey, butter, black coffee, olives. The whole family crowding my grandparents' apartment on Peebles Street. Silver spoon against china cup, ice in a glass, strike of a match. Was it there that I learned to leave my body, grounded only by stitches I rubbed with my fingers, while I hovered, observing from ceiling, windowsill, doorway, watching not only my grandfather, cigar waving to make a point, my father shouting, my grandmother hiding a smile with her hand, but also the child distracted, her food untouched, her fingers rhythmic motion. In the white-walled room, gleaming threads lie untangled, and I know I could choose any one and follow, color drawing me out of the room, out of the house, out of my ordinary life. In the dream, I lift one strand, feel the familiar silk, but that's all. From outside the window, as swirling dust clogs the screens and dulls the fluttering threads, it gets harder to make out the girl sitting cross-legged on the red pine floor. Harder still to remember she held the beginning of something bright in her hand. This is just a very recent and short poem. It's called Self-Portrait. I'm water and the wooden oar that stirs the literal dirt. Taloned hawk and rabbit dead. A walk, a breath. Wind braids the linden trees. The north train whines. To the world I'm warden of, this knotted brow's a door, a lid. Dark blinks and hoards the blues and red. I always went back to the same place. When I found it again, downhill and up past the shed, left and left where the logging road forks, right at the meadow, the path's steep drop. I scrambled, half slid to the flat, pushed through rhododendron to stone and light, the river a ribbon below. I lay down and pressed my bare back against heat. I always returned to the same place, wanting what? This certain light? These red tails drifting? This pair of box turtles, corydalus growing from a crack in the rock? I went back. I liked best to see no one. I went back for the full moon rise, and when days cooled so the rattlers sought sun in the path, I went back.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Laurie Wilson, reading her poems. The dream poem that you read, Laurie, I want to ask you about the process of dream writing, if you could talk to us about it, because that poem was kind of shocking in its full-bodied detail, and you said something like, it hasn't changed much from the dream. And, you know, often dream poems will be really spacey and, you know, someone will say, you know, the fish turned into a boat and left or something, you know, but this was not like that. So can you talk about your dream writing?
I have a lot of those very weird kinds of dreams also, but I've had some dreams that have been very complete, and I don't know, I consider them significant dreams that have been important to record and write down, and this came out of a dream like that. And the whole poem doesn't come from the dream, but begins in the dream and goes out from there.
Okay, so not all those details were in the dream.
Yeah.
Or were they?
The dream, the part that occurs on the floor in the room, that part is from the dream. And then it branches out into memories from childhood and a grandmother's house that's not part of that dream.
Oh, okay. Because you were freaking me out because I thought that whole thing came out like that. And I'm like, oh, my God.
No.
I never dreamt anything.
And that poem was also like that. Very influenced by the fact that I was reading, at the time I wrote that, C.K. Williams, and experimenting with long lines. And I was also reading Marianne McFadden's Eye of the Blackbird, which also deals in very long lines. So there was the dream there, and there was also the cadence of those two writers as this was making its way to paper. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and obviously our listeners can't see, but that was a long line poem in couplets. Is that right?
I don't even remember 15 couplets, but yes, it's a long line poem. I think you're right.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So mentioning other writers, do you often write, you know, write after reading or write from the work of other writers? Do you know what I mean? As in an imitation poem to get started?
I do write imitation poems. I find two things happen. One, sometimes if I'm reading a writer, I just end up with that cadence in my head. So I'll notice when I'm writing that, oh, okay, I'm channeling this particular poet. But I also do work a lot with imitations. And the one poem I read, Self-Portrait, came from an imitation, more of a process, that Paisley Rectall used in a poem that she wrote. So, yeah, that is definitely part of my process.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think you get from these imitations that you wouldn't get otherwise? I mean, besides, you know, you talk about the cadence, but does it have to do with subject matter also? Or I guess I'm asking, you know, why use that? Or is that just something you don't question, you just do it?
Well, I think my writing happens a couple different ways. Sometimes it is subject-oriented, like the dream poem that came out of a dream. But I also really enjoy the process of a poem that comes out of some constraints, where, you know, I might know a general topic that it's going to be about. The poem that I was telling you about, the self-portrait, that actually comes, the structure behind that poem is to take a little phrase. You only get the letters that are in that phrase, and your vocabulary comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you generate a vocabulary, and that's your limit. And what comes out of that, your poem comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just channels a different part of the creative mind.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy that process.
Okay. So. Can you read some more?
Yes. I had an interview on prosody a few years ago, and one of the questions asked was had to do with all of the broken things in my poems. And I've thought about that a lot since then and why that matters. And a couple of years ago, I had the troubling experience of being hit by a car while crossing the street and having the experience of having my body literally broken in pieces. And I think the next group of poems that I wanted to share with you came out of that, not so much topically as out of that process of it being broken and feeling broken. Begin with the goldfinch. Begin with the goldfinch I carried, and none of the roads were straight. I was a bull believing something would fall if I stayed wide open. Salt water I couldn't swallow, couldn't keep steady, sloshed over the sides and ruined the tiny print. Cuidado, abrazos. And our houses, built close to the lane and the gray wood, wind beaten, sand beaten, goat bleat, a constant refrain. In the mud we waved until stairs folded into the plain. We didn't know months, whittled to hours, to a minute. The blue lid halo and rotting food hunger, a memory, hard, hairless skull of a deer and the road washed out. I said, take this child to her mother. Encuentre a la madre ahorita. And the jagged flash and shielding my eyes, and the song I mouthed over and over, trying to ring out some meaning, and the meaning. Stundo, standing on the highway shoulder. It doesn't matter. If she dies, she can't think it, can't pull a thought's thread from the snarl without snapping. Her head's quick turn signifies nothing so conscious as smell or sight. Legs splayed, she lists left. She catches herself, or she falls. during that time, but more generally than that, I've noticed in myself an impulse to pray. I don't actually believe in God, but I still have this impulse to address someone. And so this poem comes out of exploring that. And prayer is one kind of faith. Spring water, lost through the sieve of my hands. Forgive me. Thirsty, impatient, I turned to any idol. Dear black polished table, last night a bird I'd never heard became a baby's colicky wail. It wasn't the baby's distress pinned me all night to the window, dear black, but the bone-weary mother I wanted to rock. Only I was afraid. And wasn't I once a girl in charge? Dear childhood desk, at least give me that. And then I was lying, and then I stopped speaking, still as August air, and stillness is another kind of faith, an empty kiln fire jar at the bottom of which might be my name. Sumac shadow, I waited, and watching your slow leafy wave, I believed that some things are harmless, that someone would know my name. Dear moon, yellow moon, full right on schedule. I'm the one in the red fleece jacket, down here on the sidewalk, relieved to see your pocked face. And this poem was a celebration of 1 year after being broken, and it's called Anniversary. When the healer pulled the long tape stuck with blood and hair like flies, with mirror shards, paint, steel filings, pulled hand over hand until my chest rose. Shall I tell you that my right eye has begun to turn outward, that the pain behind my orbital bones increases? There was a loosening, like giving in to rain, letting the coat fall open to rain music. When the healer pulled the long tape, tugged until my chest rose and the last inch let go of my heart, hawthorn came. White blossom swept every chamber. Not a return to who I was. Hummingbird drunk on Rose of Sharon shelters in the hemlock. See-through wing fans flip back as if they could touch the spine, and forward the fragile spine arches.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Laurie Wilson. She's reading from her new manuscript, The Horse at Dunkard Creek. Wow, I really, really love those poems. I'm still in them, I think. I always have a sense of the primal and the elemental in your work. And one thing I really appreciate is that the speaker in your poems delivers the hard news. You know, it's not sugar-coated, you know. But I also have this feeling, and I wonder if this makes any sense to you, that the speaker is reporting on the condition of beauty somehow, you know, whether it's related to the body or to the, hesitate to say soul, but on the condition of beauty in the natural world is always there. Does that ring any bells for you?
Tell me more what you mean by condition of beauty.
Well, it seems like beauty is always a factor in the work. I always, you know, I'm hearing maybe some tough details, and then they become beautiful all of a sudden. I'm like, how did she do that? And so I feel like beauty is a factor in whatever is happening, and that I don't know exactly what I mean by condition of beauty. What beauty is up to in this scenario or something, whatever the the poem is doing, but beauty seems to be there somehow, and it's really, really kind of cool. So,
I think that something happens when you pay close attention. And in a broader way than to the very immediate thing that's happening. So, you know, if a person's injured, or, you know, let's be more specific. You know, my bones were broken. That's not pretty. But there's still things around me that are pretty. And they're part of that experience. It's not just me and whatever my body is doing at that moment. There's where I am, what I'm sitting on, what I'm looking at, what the air feels like that's going by. So I guess it's recognizing how complex experience is and how many aspects there are to it.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the interaction between you know, the external world and the internal world. I remember how you started with the well, the poem, the well, I was born without a meadow. You know, I mean, there would be many other ways to end that line. You know, mm-hmm. I was born without a something, but we're surprised by meadow. So I feel like the for me, meadow, you know, conjures something beautiful. I think that's a beautiful line. So I guess I'm thinking of that interaction, and like you said, the complexity or the layering of images that you do in your work that just evokes so much complexity of feeling. So we have time for some more.
Okay. I was thinking about what you said about the meadow, and it's interesting that I've had it pointed out to me that there are a lot of references to natural objects in my writing. I don't think of myself as a country person.
Mm-hmm.
I live in town. I like urban settings.
Mm-hmm.
But in spite of that, these things from the physical natural world seem to be the markers
mm-hmm.
for me in mm-hmm. my life. So I'm going to read a couple poems that help, well, that are examples of that, I guess. Building the spring house. Once we began, we forgot the open van. The mortar mixed in 5-gallon buckets, slopped on boots, smeared on jeans, troweled above, below, in the cracks. Cinder blocks staggered in rows, and the chatter and shouts from the kids racing downhill on their bikes. It was mid-afternoon when we stopped for lunch, and I thought to close the van. And I'd never seen a warbler or any bird as perfect as the two, yellow-green, black-hooded, huddled in a sweatshirt on the seat. I don't know why they let me lift them in the nest of my cupped hands, or why they made no sound but rested in the ferns before they flew. On White Avenue, a maple leaf drifted to the broken sidewalk. You know the place, past First Ward School, where AA meets now. But before the crest of the hill, before the road narrows so only one car can pass at a time. It was 93 degrees. Everything that could grew a green riot along that road when this single leaf fell. Along its veins, yes, still bright green, but yellow taking over toward the edge, brown spot widening on one lobe, though the leaf remained supple and glittered as if sprinkled with its own sugar, though I couldn't say if it was sweet, I didn't touch it with my tongue. Even now on my bed, as it curls its increasingly papery skin, flecks of light, here on a vein, here, where brown is a pond in a yellow field. Here, where one tip begins to bleed red. I wish I loved the bat that stopped my descent into sleep, careening reckless above my head, so fast I couldn't swear at first it was a bat. I wish I'd loved it, but I felt no admiration swell, nor compassion, nor even pity. Nor was I brave inside my quickly cobbled blanket fort, or hidden behind the door I opened wide, hoping it would go. Upstairs, I heard wings beat the walls, frantic, drunken. I closed the door and stuffed a towel beneath, but when I woke, no bat. Next night, lights out, the muffled thump of wings, the bat was back. The third night, I called Mike from ABC. We watched the bat come gliding down dark stairs and blur, erratic swoop from room to room, until Mike caught it in his net. I saw it then, small as my fist, brown-furred, wings drawn in, was startled by its constant, panicky chatter, trapped as it was between mesh and my wool rug. I wish I could have loved the bat, bony, pale, impetuous, the way Mike loved it. Mike, who, too, was bony, ugly even, front tooth twice as long as mine and no tooth next to it, which gave him an odd lisp, talking softly, crooning really. To the bat he lifted slowly and settled in the cage. This is the title poem of my manuscript. The Horse at Dunkard Creek. All winter I wanted to call her to me, but only if no one could hear. Today I reached over the fence, apple core in my open palm, and she came. Clouds covered the pale blue of earlier afternoon. All winter I wanted to fade. My skin hurt, the softest fabric scraped. I didn't want to shower. Any light strained through the gray, and the days were stale bread, chicken bones. I was looking for anything new or out of the ordinary, blue-winged warbler, a bonus at work. Today, the light woke me, so much light I had to squint for a while. I put the All Seasons back on the Corolla and carried the snow tires down to the basement the same day instead of hauling them around on the back seat for months. The critter in the wall turned out to be the refrigerator. Today, I stood on the bank of Dunkard Creek, and the horse ate from my hand. Iris swam for sticks as long as I didn't throw them too far. And the longer I looked at the water, the more colors I saw.
It's the poetry of Laurie Wilson. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It was great. You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.